They bump along the country road, rolling through golden hills that are punctuated with granite boulders and dotted with clusters of oak trees that appear blackish green from afar. Every so often, the road dips through a marshy patch here, a thicket of wild blackberry bushes there. Broken branches and nibbled leaves, the signs of beaver and deer. Verdant meadows and white flashes of cabbage worm moths. As they near the orchard, clouds of sparrows and finches make nervous, disorganized dives at the soft yellow weeds around the plum trees, little groups of them assembling like constellations and abruptly breaking up again, each and every tiny nervous body keeping one eye turned to the sky for the shadowy shape of a hawk soaring high above. When they reach the break in the low split rail fence, the sheriff steers the car onto the property and along the dirt drive, through the many rows of trees, and toward the leaning peak of the largest foothill. The morning air is laced with the sharp, peppery scent of dry grass burning.
"Awful smoky out," Agent Bonner remarks once the automobile comes to a stop.
"Rice fields," the deputy says as the three men step out of the sheriff's old Model A. "Somewhere down in the valley. It's after harvest, see? This is when they burn 'em. Smoke gets trapped up here, against the foothills. Kinda sets around a spell."
The sky is indeed filled with a thick haze, turning it the color of dull gunmetal. The sun is a flat white disk, small as a dime, and lost in a sea of gray.
"It's routine farming business. The rice fields aren't Jap-owned," Deputy Henderson continues. "Or if they were, they aren't anymore."
He is young, the right age for a soldier, but there is an air of being excluded about him and of lingering teenage angst. Probably flat-footed, or poor eyesight, Bonner thinks. Those are the most common 4Fs, when you can't tell by simply looking at a man. Henderson's hair is the color of tarnished brass. His face and neck are very pink, the flesh cratered, ropey, and swollen with acne. Just to look at him, a man could feel the sting of what it must feel like to shave.
"Let's get this over with," Sheriff Whitcomb says.
At least it is obvious why he isn't marching around in a uniform on the front. Too old. He is thin, with haunted blue eyes, a pair of jowls, and one tuft of white hair sprouting from an otherwise shiny dome. Bonner spied the tuft back at the station before the sheriff reached for his hat and offered to drive the group out to the ranch.
"Every town seems to have a pair like this," Bonner thinks. "Henderson and Whitcomb. One will eventually replace the other, and the cycle will begin again." "You said Lewis Thorne is living in the old farmhouse now?"
the sheriff calls over his shoulder, speaking to Henderson. He is polite enough to Agent Bonner, but it is clear he prefers to pretend the agent is invisible.
"Yes," Deputy Henderson answers the sheriff in a quick, eager voice. "Old man Yamada signed it over to him before they lost legal rights. So Lewis owns it, fair and square."
"That's mighty interesting," Agent Bonner remarks.
Bonner certainly heard of cases where Japanese families had signed over their property to their white neighbors before being evacuated to the camps. In every single case, the Japanese were hoping to eventually have their land, homes, and cars returned to them, which implied a kind of special trust in one's neighbors.
"It ain't how you think. The whole town was mighty shocked the Yamadas did that," Henderson says. "The Thorns and the Yamadas had a long-standing dispute over this land."
"Why'd he sign it over to the Thorn family, then, if there was bad blood?" Bonner asks.
He looks to Whitcomb, but Whitcomb shrugs and looks away, his gaze dilating with disinterest. Bonner can tell the sheriff finds explaining town gossip to an outsider tedious.
"Lewis Thorne and Harry Yamada was friends, sort of,"
Whitcomb says dispassionately.
"Maybe old man Yamada put some stock in that. The old man didn't have any friends who weren't Japanese himself. Maybe he figured it was worth a shot."
"Took a fat chance on that,"
Deputy Henderson grunts, reaching one hand up to rub at his pimply face.
"I say Lewis ain't giving this land back. His father and grandfather always told him this land was Thorn property in the first place. They'd likely roll over in their graves if he was to think about giving it back."
"All right,"
Whitcomb says, pulling out his revolver, spinning the cylinder to ensure all six rounds are there, and putting it back in his holster.